Have you ever watched the movie The Greatest Showman? Yeah, I heard someone up front very excited. The Greatest Showman. Well, if you have not seen The Greatest Showman, I would suggest going out and watching it. It's a great movie. My wife and I saw it in theaters probably back in February. It was right after our son was born. We had somebody like babysitting the kids at home. And we thought, okay, this is going to be like the first movie we're going to just get to go out, first kind of date since little Elliot was brought into the world. And we went into this with no expectations. It basically was like, you know what? We're both so tired. If we fall asleep during a movie, there won't be any big loss at this point. But it basically kind of roped us in. And our daughter loves this musical, too. It is a musical. And she sings along with the music on Pandora, and it's very, very catchy, so I'm sure you'd love it, no matter what age you are, or where you come from, or you know where you grew up, or whatever. Everybody's going to love this, I think. Anyways, so what is The Greatest Showman? It's a musical, and it's a musical that's based on the life of P.T. Barnum and his famous circus. So there's animals, there's sideshow acts, there's pyrotechnics, all this stuff. And this movie sort of chronicles his rise from this guy who really has nothing, who doesn't know how he's going to make it, to a guy that has more than he knows what to do with, who keeps getting higher and higher and higher in this meteoric rise to fame and fortune until he nosedives and loses almost everything and everyone that are closest to him. All of his supporters, his friends, those that loved him, stop following him. Because of choices he makes, you don't think he needs spoiler tags for this or something. The choices he makes basically impact his relationship with his family, his money, his friends, and fame. And in one of the final scenes, there's a song in which he's gathered with all these folks. You know, they sought him out. They're looking for him. Where do they find him? They find him up at a bar. And it's this tiny contingency of his closest friends from the sideshow. And if you haven't been able to tell who this is from the picture, that's Hugh Jackman. And he has a gorgeous voice. And he sings this song. Here's what he says. I saw the sun begin to dim and felt that winter wind blow cold. A man learns who is there for him when the glitter fades and the walls won't hold. 'Cause from that rubble what remains can only be what's true. If all was lost, there's more I gained, 'cause it led me back to you. So thank you for telling me that I sound exactly like Hugh Jackman there. That makes me feel really good, you know, I as today goes on, you know. Well, the thing is, Barnum in the movie remembers the real reason why he got into doing what he's doing. When he has this small contingency of followers, everybody else has left. When the faithful few who remained remind him why he's doing what he's doing. You know, for the past few weeks, we've been exploring Jesus' bread of life discourse from John's gospel. If you're a visitor here and you're like, what is a discourse? Basically, a bunch of stories that kind of go one after the next, after the next, after the next in the gospels. They're all connected. And Jesus has been talking about being the, quote unquote, the bread of life. And for lack of a better word, he's really gotten everybody super, super mad at him. Because of what he says and how he does it and how he does it and, you know, why he's saying what he says and where he's saying it. You know, he's saying this from within the context of his church, the synagogue at Capernaum. Because of this, I couldn't help but think of P.T. Barnum in The Greatest Showman. Everything that Jesus seems to have built up, even though I don't think it was his intention, he wasn't trying to snowball and have all these people come to him and get fame. He wasn't trying to do that, but people heard of him. They followed alongside the boats of his disciples when they traveled. There were entourages of people, 5,000-something we heard about a couple weeks ago. He has this massive following of people coming from all corners to follow him. But all of that comes crashing down. Crashing down. When he tells them who he is and where he came from and what they, as his followers, must do. Jesus doesn't tell his people that they have to follow him, but the faithful remain. So today I want to talk about that P.T. Barnum moment in John's gospel. And I want to explore this final episode and bring you with the different chronicles of this story that we've had so far. Because I think it might make us think about our place in the world as Christians and as a congregation embedded here in the Bayview community. So let's talk about that. So we continue the Bread of Life readings in John's Gospel. Basically, there have been five stories for the past few weeks where Jesus talks about bread of life and what that means. And this discourse about bread of life has been challenging. It was challenging to people back in his day, and it was challenging for us today. We first heard about Jesus feeding 5,000 people. There wasn't enough food for everybody. The disciples looked around, they saw tons of people, and they only had a little bit of food. What are they to do? We don't hear the physics of the miracle, what exactly happens, but somehow, some way, there's enough to feed everybody. To meet the basic human needs, being fed, there is enough food. And I talked about how this story challenged maybe our sense of scarcity, our ability as a human race to meet the basic human needs of other people. When we have little, how can I give when I have so little? Well, Jesus doesn't tell you exactly how, but he challenges you to do and to think about it. The second episode in the discourse involved people who Jesus fed in the first story. They came around, they asked the man for more leftovers after the big church picnic with the feeding of the 5,000 was over. They wanted more. What did Jesus say? He didn't say, skedaddle, get out of here, you know, go get a job. He told them, you know, you're going to keep getting hungry. You're going to keep getting hungry. Every 6 hours or so, you're going to need to eat to stay alive. In other words, he recognized that people have basic human needs, but that there was more to living than being physically alive. There was more to living than being physically alive. And so he talked about the deep hunger that people have for fulfillment, for meaning, so they never feel empty. We talked about being challenged by differing viewpoints as a way of feeling something more, getting a full scope of others in the 21st century. And that was a challenge. In the third story, we heard about the repercussions of people digesting the food that Jesus had given them, the physical food, and that deeper meaning kind of food. We heard that people complained when they heard Jesus talking about being the bread of life. They struggled with his words because he said he had come down from heaven. And it really upset them because it seemed almost like he was taking their heritage story, the story about their ancestors wandering in the wilderness for 40 days, and how God sent down the manna, and offending them intentionally. Jesus, in a way, offended that religious community because he called himself the bread of heaven. And they knew his birth parents. They knew Mary and Joseph, and they didn't appreciate him talking that way. Even though Jesus was saying one thing with deeper meaning to it, they heard something totally different. It's like they heard past one another. They were so fixated on the traditions that they couldn't hear what he was really trying to say. In a sense, he was challenging their notion of heritage and tradition in a way that might lead them to see their heritage and tradition in something else, in the life that he offered. But they didn't like what he was saying, and they complained. In the fourth gospel reading, things got lit. People fought. They didn't just complain about what he was saying and doing and argue with one another, but they actually fought it out. They fought it out. We heard that Jesus said he was the bread of heaven, but then we also heard that he said people needed to eat and drink from his body. His faith community, the Jewish folks, they fought with one another about what this meant. My flesh is real bread. My blood is real wine. In saying this, Jesus went deeper and deeper down the rabbit trail. If the people were upset about him talking about his origin in a way that seemed insensitive to their background, they were even more upset about him talking about this precious Seder meal, the Passover meal, and saying his body was the true food of that meal. It seemed totally and utterly unforgivable to them. Now, in today's story, the fifth and the final one that we have today, we hear what happens when people complain and people fight, and then what happens when Jesus doesn't take his foot off the gas. He doesn't shy away from saying what he says or doing what he does. He doesn't back off when talking about his body or blood and how they need to eat. He doesn't back off from talking about his divine origin, where he came from, even though people knew Mary and Joseph. He doesn't back off from saying he is the bread of life. And he tells them, insult to injury, your ancestors ate the bread that came down from heaven, and they died. But I'm the real deal. Everybody around him was offended. Everybody was quarreling. And here's the kicker. John's gospel tells us he was teaching these things in the synagogue. He was teaching them at church. When many of his disciples heard this, John says, they said, this teaching is difficult. Who can accept it? But Jesus, almost like he's sticking his foot in his mouth even further, doesn't relent. Do you remember that Russell Crowe movie where he fights people? That's pretty much every Russell Crowe movie. He fights people. There was one called Gladiator that came out, you know, back in the early 2000s. And he plays this general, General Maximus, who ends up being taken into slavery. And then he has to fight his way out of slavery in, like, the arena in Rome. There is this scene where he yells out, "Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?" After slaughtering all these innocent, you know, other folks that are fighting for their lives. In a way, Jesus has this Maximus moment. He keeps escalating and escalating and escalating and escalating, and then says, "Does this offend you? Does this offend you?" And then he tells them why. He says, if this offends you, talk of the bread of heaven, talk of flesh and blood, talk of your dead ancestors, then what are you going to do at the end when I leave you? What are you going to do when I ascend into heaven? He says, spirit gives you life. Flesh is useless. What I'm speaking to you is spirit, not flesh. I'm sure you would have been able to hear a pin drop after he said that. Because we hear that, quote, many of his disciples turned back and no longer went with him. They didn't like what he had to say. And so they left. So Jesus turned to the remaining few that were with him, the 12. And he said, do you want to leave too? And I think that's that Barnum moment. They say to him, just like the folks gathered around Barnum, they say, Lord, who can we go? Where else would we want to be? We're with you till the end. And so Barnum sings, from the rubble what remains can only be what's true. I think Jesus doesn't make a mistake in saying what he says and what he's said over the last few weeks of this difficult journey through these scriptures. He knows what he says is challenging to those around him. He's not trying to get a rise out of folks to see how far he can press the envelope. He isn't trolling people. He knows what he says. He doesn't want to leave behind scorched earth and a heap of ash. He wants to leave behind new life, alternative perspectives, in the hope of bringing people to new life, eternal life, a life different than the temporary earthly life that they had. He challenged people to wrestle with their own convictions, to determine what they believed aligned with God's vision for the world. He breaks down, burns away, destroys what his fellow people, the same religious community, were comfortable with, that they might live differently. And in the end, there were those who left. And there were also those that followed. Last week, I reminded us that we celebrated Pentecost Sunday back in May, and we used this chalice. And we remember on Pentecost, you know, we wear red. We still have the Pentecost flags hanging in here. We remember that the apostles each had tongues of fire that rested upon their heads. And they were able to speak and understand different languages. It's a story from the book of Acts in the New Testament. And since that Sunday, this chalice has sat up on the altar. And it's been kind of cold and full of ash and just the remnants of that exciting day, that birthday of the church. But that is not the church, and that is not our church. We are a church. We are a denomination. And we are a community here in Bayview. And in our time, in the 21st century, I think, that is not just a pile of ash. We are a community that can have difficult discussions, that can face turbulent challenges and burn brightly with the Spirit. Not to burn down for the sake of burning, but to burn away for new growth and understanding. Now, you remember when I had you call out that controversial stuff? The stuff we shouldn't talk about in church? Stuff that we should not address in this context? Well, in the words of Jesus, does this offend you? I hope it doesn't. Because I think there is real growth as a Pentecost church, a church of fire and spirit that comes from talking about things in healthy dialogue, addressing it as Christians living in the 21st century, not to leave behind scorched earth, but like a prairie fire, to leave behind life-giving ash that leads to new growth, green growth, and newness. The Jesus who challenged his contemporaries 2,000 years ago about scarcity, about fulfillment, about tradition, customs, the meaning of life itself, asks us today, do you want to go too? Because from that rubble, what remains can only be what's true. It is my prayer for each of us that we might be challenged by the words of Jesus, to be the Pentecost church, to interpret with new language and with fire, new ideas and spirit, the things like Jesus talked about when he walked and talked on this earth, so we may be the best, the most engaged Christians living in this 21st century and in this world that we can be. Thank you.